Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, I'm Tom Butler.
I'm Brendan Duffy.
And I'm Tom Wheatley.
And you're listening to the James Bond A to Z podcast.
Join us as three lifelong 007 fans go on a journey of discovery.
We're on a mission to discover everything we can about cinema's greatest spy films.
By learning about the people who made them, in front of the camera and behind.
The James Bond A to Z podcast is in no way affiliated with James Bond, Eon, or the Fleming Estate. We've researched each episode as extensively as we can, but our information does come from a range of sources. We do our best to make sure the information is accurate, but sometimes we can get it wrong. If you want to correct us on something or add some more detail, email us at podcast@jamesbondatoz.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to the James Bond A to Z podcast. This is a special episode. We thought that we had done enough banging on about James Bond without having really introduced ourselves. And so, yeah, this is a special episode. I'm Tom Butler. This is Brendan and Tom.
Hi.
Hello.
And yeah, it's a bit more conversational, this one, than our usual episodes. You know, we go through a letter of the alphabet and speak about the Bond creatives. But this is really just us having a bit of a chinwag. Wheatley's having a beer to talk about.
I've got a Guinness on the go.
Have you? Why is everyone drinking but me?
Don't just focus on me for the beers. It makes me sound bad.
That's what I did. I deflected away from you.
Yeah,
don't worry.
Yeah, cheers for that. Brendan's had 10.
Yeah, as you haven't guessed, Brendan is Irish of descent. With a name like...
How would they have guessed that?
Brendan Duffy. Oh, I mean, it's quite an Irish name.
Oh, yeah, that's
is
probably...
Is it not?
They might have got it from that.
And now, drinking a Guinness, I've locked it in, haven't I?
No, and...
Is that why you're obsessed with Brosnan? I hadn't put two and two together.
It's not, no. Just coincidence.
Right.
So we're going to rattle through a few sort of classic James Bond questions, just to sort of, you know, share our thoughts on some of the hot topics around James Bond. We haven't shared notes on any of this, so whatever we say is going to come as a total surprise to each other as well, I guess. What, do you want to kick off, Wheatley?
You'll probably realise when we start arguing. Yeah.
Wheatley, why don't you ask the first question?
Okay. Who am I asking it to? Who's starting?
Brendan?
Wherever you want.
Go wherever you want.
Start with Brendan. Let's go with Brendan, because I'm more interested in what he's got to say about this one. because I know who his favourite Bond actor is. Okay, so, Brendan, what scene defines your favourite Bond actor and why?
Well, first off, who do you think my favourite Bond actor is?
Pierce Brosnan.
I'd assume Brosnan.
Yeah, see? There's no surprise there. You're meant to be in shock. Well... The scene I went for, because obviously we covered this in the Brosnan episode, he didn't get dealt a great hand, but that doesn't mean there isn't some great scenes in there. But I actually went for the fight he has with 006 in GoldenEye.
Very good.
The top of GoldenEye, because it shows, like, throughout that film, he showed that he looks like Bond and he sounds like Bond. And this is where he shows his ruthless streak, I think, where he drops 006 to his death. I just think that shows what Brosnan could have gone on to do.
Yeah, it's a good fight as well. It's pretty hardcore. It's, there's some real, I won't say not real, but it's fairly realistic punches going on in there.
Yeah, it's pretty graphic. They show Alec Trevelyan when his bones get crunched at the bottom of the dish.
Yeah,
but I did want to put an honourable mention in there for when he
straight the Brosnan film.
Yes, it's Brosnan.
Yeah.
where he straightens his tie underwater in The World Is Not Enough.
Yeah, that is. I'm surprised you didn't go for that first. That's what I think of when I think of Brosnan and Bond.
I wanted to combine those two moments, one that show his ruthlessness and one that show how suave and sort of sophisticated he is.
How ludicrous!
You basically picked a. Yeah, you've gone for a Connery and a Roger
and a Moore. Yeah. Combined into one, and that's what makes Brosnan so great.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah. Can't argue with that. Okay then, well, same question to you, Tom Butler.
Well, I mean, it's hard to decide who your favourite Bond is. It could be any different Bond any day of the week. Connery, for me, is the, you know, I'm a classicist when it comes to Bond sometimes, and Connery, for me, is the greatest Bond. I really sort of was torn between two scenes. I mean, the one that I always talk about is when he's playing golf with Goldfinger. But I wasn't sure whether that's one you were going to bring up, Wheatley. But that, for me, just is... It's not just Bond. It's not just Connery. It's Bond as well. He doesn't like cheats. And it's just him playing sport. And it's such a gentle scene, but there's just so much tension going on between the two of them. And I just love... I just love that scene. He looks great in his golfing gear. There's lots of nice back and forth between him and Goldfinger. And the whole thing about the golf balls and the cheating is brilliant. That's for me is Connery as Bond. The other one is from Dr. No, and that was, you know, You've Had Your Six, where he just cold-bloodedly kills the Spectre guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of people point to that as being, like, you know, Bond's most brutal moment. And you can sort of see that, but that's who he is. He's got a license to kill. That's his job.
Yeah.
Wheatley?
Yeah. Yeah, you've got to explain it. Well, it comes as no surprise to you that I have also chosen Sean Connery as my favourite Bond. Although that's a fairly recent thing, because I think for a while Moore was my favourite, and it's only over the past year or so that I've really got stuck in with Connery. But the scene I've picked is also from Goldfinger, but it's the scene where he goes into the hotel room, or the, I don't know, his chalet or something, and there's the lady that's been in the bath. And he kind of goes to hug her, takes off his gun, and looks in her eyes, and he sees an assassin behind him and fights the assassin and eventually electrocutes him. But the reason I chose that scene is because I think it pretty much ticks off everything that Sean Connery is. He's as soon as he walks in, he's cool, he's wearing a suit, you've just seen him come in from like a cool bar or something, he's relaxed. There's a woman in there, straight away he starts, you know, pashing with her.
Pashing.
And I'm not sure if pashing's... I've probably been watching too many old films recently. So he just starts kissing her, and then suddenly it changes again. So he goes from being this cool ladies man to being a resourceful kind of assassin type. He looks in her eye and he sees the assassin behind him. Then he starts fighting, and it's a pretty good fight. He does quite... It's not your standard kind of Roger Moore fake... jumping around. It's like he's really punching and he's grabbing stuff and throwing him around, and then throws him in the bath, kills him straight away, doesn't even care about it, still smiling. I think he's laughing when he does that, and then goes back to the woman and just looks at her and says, "Oh, shocking," and then walks off. Everything you could possibly imagine about Sean Connery covered in one scene. Everything you need to know. He's cool, he's a ladies man, he's hard, he doesn't care about killing people, he's funny, and he's got a nice suit. There you go.
He looks good in a suit. What That's a the important choice. Thing, isn't it? Yeah.
And he pulls it off.
Very good choice.
Yeah, I'm tempted to watch it again tonight, actually. Now I've been thinking about it so much.
Did you have any runners-up, either of you?
I mean, I looked at stuff like... Most of my things for Sean came from Goldfinger, because I think Goldfinger is when he hits his peak. I think Dr. No... I struggled to find a scene in that really encapsulates him, because I don't think there's a lot of elements of his character that come out until later on. And Dr. No, he's got the bare bones of what he becomes, but it's not as clear. I think Goldfinger, it's very clear in every scene. He's acting like he's sophisticated, cool, he's a killer, all these things. He knows how to act. It's like Brosnan when he's in GoldenEye. He's not quite ready yet. But I think in Goldfinger, he hits his stride. And even from Rush with Love, I think that's... It's at some points, and you said the other day that it's a little bit like a Hitchcock film, and it is. And his character is almost Hitchcockian in that he's a little bit—you're not too sure who he is. He's
a bit of a cipher, yeah.
He's like a bit nuanced, but I think, yeah, I looked at quite a few, and they all came from Goldfinger, and the golf scene was one of them, but I wanted to choose a scene that had everything in it, really.
Yeah, I toyed with having Dalton and the scene that he kills Sanchez with the lighter, because that is just, that's pure Dalton for me. I mean, I've got a huge soft spot for him, but I couldn't say that he was my favourite over Connery. I just couldn't.
No. Well, maybe when we have another break from research, we'll do our second options for all of these and go into depth with them.
Do it again. Who wants to ask the next question?
I'll go for it. So, which of Bond's stalwart characters is the most important? And I'll open the forum, whoever wants to answer that.
You go for it, Butler.
Well, I went for... it's a bit of a cheat, this one. Tanner and or Leiter, Felix Leiter.
Yeah.
And I know they're not, it's not the M, it's not Q, it's not Moneypenny, and they're all really important. But in terms of like most important, like defining that, the thing that you get with Tanner and with Felix Leiter is Bond doesn't really have many friends, but you get the sense that they're his friends. And it's that brings out the human side in him. And, you know, they appear semi-regularly. They give Bond a sense of humanity. And I think that you really need that to offset him with all the sort of the ludicrous stuff that he gets up to with the killing and the girls and the gadgets and all that sort of stuff. The Felix and or Tanner, you know, really shows that he's a real person as well, and just gives him that extra dimension for me anyway.
I might have known that you bring Tanner into it.
He couldn't resist, could he?
He's just... I think he likes Tanner more than Bond, actually. He's waiting for that Tanner spin-off series. I mean, I'm going for a similar reason as well, but I'm going a bit more obvious. But the reason I'm going obvious is because I think you can't really beat it. M. Because M, in every film, is... It's like the one thing that grounds Bond to the real world all the time. You do have Leiter and you do have Tanner and these other characters, but they fluctuate quite a lot throughout the series. Obviously, Tanner in the Daniel Craig series, he's very good, but earlier on, he's probably not quite as good in some of the Brosnan ones. And that's my opinion. But the same goes for Leiter. Leiter's really good in some of his incarnations as Leiter, but sometimes he's not quite as... He's not really a friend. He's more just like a guy who's helping him out. And I think M is consistently, apart from a little bit in the Moore era, he's just this constant grounding force for Bond in quite a lot of ways. So if you're looking at him as an assassin or somebody who's just a killer who's going around killing people, M brings him back to Earth and you realise that he's not flawless. He can't just get on with these things. He makes mistakes, and M always reminds him of those mistakes. But also, it's quite easy to look at Bond as like a superhero quite a lot. But when you go and see M, he almost becomes like a little boy and he's getting told off. And you can see this kind of mischievous side in him, or this slightly, not lacking confidence side, but more like he knows that he's not always right. And M's the only person who knows that. So you get that kind of, it's a very easy way to add another level to a character by throwing M in and just making that, he has to show that other side of him. If you didn't have M in this series, it would be a very different all the way through, I think. I think it would be very similar to, like, maybe not John Wick, but something where it's a much more one-dimensional character. Mm. And you can say the same with, like, Moneypenny, but I don't think Moneypenny has as much as an effect. She's really just a slight nuance in his in the films. But M actually makes an impact on everything that he does. Even in... Is it M in License to Kill? Or did they change the role in that one? I can never remember. It was the new M, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was.
Who actually revokes his license. Yeah, so even in that, I don't think he's a particularly good M, but I think the fact that he did that just goes to show that M has this impact on Bond that he can't ignore. So yeah, I'm sticking with M. And then, of course, you've got the M character changes with the times, and you've got Judi Dench as well, who is a completely different M than Bernard Lee's M, but does the same job in a different way for a modern day. Brendan?
So you two just want Bond to die then, do you? Because without Q, Bond would be dead time and time again.
Yeah.
So that's obviously what you want, but that's not the only reason I've picked Q. That is, you know, that does help that Q comes up with these gadgets, and so when Bond's out in the field, he
can you clarify?
You're talking about John Cleese version here.
Yeah, which Q you're talking about here?
I'm talking about Desmond Llewellyn. I'm not talking about John Cleese or Ben Whishaw. And the reason is because Desmond Llewellyn's Q is more like a father figure to Bond.
Yes.
Their relationship, as you can see, like the irritation that Q has for Bond is very much like a father-son relationship they've got going on. And it's similar to the M role, I would say.
Yeah.
It's more of an extension of that. It's more grounding for Bond. Mm. Somebody else with authority.
I suppose with Q, the beauty is that he doesn't really... He's not as authoritative, is he? He's actually listening to him because, out of choice. He doesn't have to listen to him.
Mm.
And he doesn't always listen to him, but...
No.
Yeah.
And then all the way up to his last film, The World Is Not Enough, and Pierce Brosnan's Bond was sad to hear that he was going to be retiring. It was a strong relationship, and obviously he went through all the Bonds up to Brosnan, so...
Mm. And he knew that John Cleese was going to take over.
Yeah, I'm off.
He'll give me invisible cars. I don't want it.
So, yeah, I've gone for Q.
I guess that's Cleese's biggest legacy, isn't it? The invisible car.
Oh, it was just... He did... Is it a legacy?
Don't mention the car.
Brilliant.
Oh, very good.
Very good, very good. I'd love them to introduce the Ponsonby character. You know, he's got a secretary in the books, his own personal secretary, that they sort of changed for Moneypenny in the films. I'd love maybe in the future for her to be brought in as a character, someone that works for Bond. Yeah. I think that'd be interesting. Yeah. All right, next question. Who is the most important Bond creative? This is a good question for us because we're just talking about these people all the time, aren't we? But who do you think is the one that has had the biggest impact on the film franchise? Wheatley.
Well, it's interesting this one because we obviously with the podcast so far we've only got up to C, but it does seem like the majority of the major creatives are in the early part of the alphabet. And I was thinking, is it just because we've only got to C that I've not really picked anyone that's outside of that? But I think the main ones are all quite early on in the alphabet.
Richard Maybaum,
so
I think
it's a tricky one. Sorry.
Richard Maybaum, I think we'll get to. Obviously, he'll be looming large, but
Yeah, and as when we're talking about creatives, I think that what we were saying was anybody who had a creative role in shaping the whole of the Bond series. So, I mean, it could even be a kind of stunt person, I think, if you wanted it to be, because they're kind of shaping how these films look. So yeah, this is quite a tough one, actually. I sat and looked through various films and tried to get my head around what was the most important elements. And I think I came to the conclusion that, I mean, you can't have... Some of them have done the films like 10, 11, 12 films early on, and they've shaped the way those Bond films are. The later ones are quite difficult to say that they were the most important ones. Mm-hmm. So it was really difficult because I don't think you could take out any element of them. I don't think you could take out the sets. I don't think you could take out the, you know, obviously script writing. You couldn't take that out, but they do change quite a lot. But I think for me, it's John Barry, just because... I was watching these Bond films and I'd quite like to re-edit one just to see what it's like without John Barry music, if I just took it from some other film. But every scene, it would fall a lot flatter if it didn't have that music. And you see that quite a lot in, I think we talk about it in one of the podcasts as well, where, which one is it? There's a film, you've got GoldenEye, where the music falls a bit flat in the scenes.
Yeah.
But there's certain films, early ones as well, where there's scenes where they don't play John Barry's 007 music or they haven't got an orchestral score that he's done. And you know, you instantly can say, it needs a bit of Bond music here, it's not working. But yeah, he did 11 films and pretty much all of the early ones. And without him, you know, nobody has anything to work from. So I think he's, for me, the most important element of those, and if that went, I don't think you could fill up that hole.
Yeah, well, I think Monty Norman's lawyers will be on the phone.
Well, this was the problem, but you have this problem with every single one of the creators because every one of them has another person that did something on it. I won't say who because you might choose one of these people, but yeah, that was a difficult bit. Mm. I don't think you can say any single person is relate like not all of the music is John Barry's stuff, but. he's probably had the greatest influence on the films.
It's funny you say John Barry. Sorry, Brendan, but he was an example that I was going to mention because, you know, for Never Say Never Again, you watch that film and it doesn't feel like a Bond film because it doesn't have the Bond music. Right. And that's just like, if they'd put Bond music on that, it would be 15% better. I think it's a decent film. Yeah. I don't think it's dreadful, but if it had John Barry's music on it, oh boy, it would be 10 times better.
Sure, somebody must have edited that.
Yeah, the music just does so much of the heavy lifting for these films sometimes that,
You said, well, you said that about Tomorrow Never Dies, weren't you? Yeah. That a lot of those scenes are a little bit relentless until you put that music on and suddenly it becomes significantly more exciting.
Yeah.
You know, in From Russia With Love, when Bond goes into the hotel room and he's just searching for for bugs, and they play the Bond theme the whole time, and it instantly, like, oh, what's going to happen? You're like, on edge. Yeah.
They play it a lot.
Just from the music.
They play it a lot.
They do play it a lot, yeah.
But you look at Goldfinger. I basically bring everything back to Goldfinger because I think Goldfinger's a perfect film. Not even just a perfect Bond film. I think it's a perfect film in general. And that music in that film is, I think you'd struggle to find one scene where you go, don't like it in this. It's just perfect.
Yeah.
But when I think of it, the music is playing in my head. When I think about Jill Masterson on the bed, I can hear the music playing when I think about it. And that's a pretty important sign that it has such an integral part for the film. And if you think about other films, I can't think of the music that goes with those scenes. And it's not even the Bond scene. The Bond music. It's a completely different song. It's the one that Sneaker Pimps covered. But yeah, if you think of a scene and you've got the music in your head, I think that's a pretty good sign that it's an important part of it.
Brendan?
I had the same issue with you going through thinking...
With me?
Yeah. Just all the creatives going... Yeah. Early creatives, they were integral, all of them, as much as the other. Yeah. But...
Go on, tell us how you found a Brosnan creative.
Eric Serra.
No, I went early as well. I went early as well and down the same route as you. Not John Barry, I went for Ken Adam, who we covered in an earlier episode, because he created... So Barry created the sound of the world Bond lives in. Adam created the actual world he is physically in.
Yeah.
And all those iconic lairs that he created just has been... It's a blueprint for Bond, as is Barry. You know, these people, these creatives, they created the blueprint for Bond moving forward. You know that is a Bond.
Yeah.
And they're still obviously using that now. And I think they will do because it's something like his right from the beginning, his Dr. No lair is just incredible.
And that trivia about the scene where he didn't have a set made and so he just built a white room and put the light through the grill at the top, you know, where Dr. No gives him the spider.
Spider, yeah. Amazing. Absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
And to have a genius mind like that working on, you know, those early Bonds to put it in place, and obviously he worked on many more. So I went for Ken Adam,
And you don't get many set designers that are as famous as Ken Adam.
No, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I toyed with John Barry. He was my choice. I mean, ultimately, Cubby Broccoli, for me, is the ultimate creative. I know he's sort of the producer, but without him, none of these people would be there, I guess. I mean, obviously, Harry Saltzman.
Well, but we talked about this when we talked about Cubby saying that he's not a normal producer anyway. Producers normally aren't this
hands-on,
you know, creatively involved in it, and he shaped it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I guess Cubby and Harry in those early years, but then Cubby, because he carried it on and you know, still has, it's his legacy that continues the films onwards. So, that would have been mine. And just something again on Ken Adam, obviously it wasn't just the sets, like the DB5 as well, you know, the gadgets on that,
of course,
as we discussed, then becomes such an iconic. And then, you know, Wet Nelly, like, these are the cornerstones of the Bond legacy, right? And it's down to this one guy. Amazing work. And then the other couple I sort of wanted to mention were, you know, Robert Brown John and Maurice Binder, who we talked about at length in B. You can't really pinpoint one of them, I think. Binder, because he worked on it for so long, but then Brown John, just for the work that he did on those two title scenes from Russia With Love and Goldfinger. that has just shaped the franchise ever since as well. So
it goes to show that Bond is all about collaboration. You know, it's all these ideas percolating together to create something great.
Yeah. It's always bigger than the actor involved, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the difficult thing with Bond. And we talked about that when we went through Binder, in that, fine, Bond is like the most integral, important character to the series, but he changes. And if he changes all the time, you can't change everything else. You have to maintain this theme that goes through it. And like when Daniel Craig comes on for the first time and the Bond theme plays, which isn't actually till later, is it? But as soon as it plays, you suddenly go, oh, I get it now. He's Bond, right? Yeah, understand. And that's that. And all they needed to do was play that music to say he's become Bond by doing this. And it's not often you hear music that has that kind of power. Same with the sets as well. Like if you're watching a Bond film and the set looks nothing like a Bond film and there's a different Bond actor playing, you'd be like, well, this isn't a Bond film, is it? What's going on here? But so it's a testament to the fact that the Broccoli family have just stuck to their guns with this and managed to maintain that level of creative discipline throughout without going, oh, there's all these other things we could use. No, we've got to stick with this and just change it slightly. So yeah, it's in terms of creators, Bond's got some of the best that have ever been.
Definitely.
Okay, so let's move on to the fourth question. It starts getting a little bit harder now because you've really got to think about the question. It's not just an obvious one. So, Brendan, if you were to show one 007 film to someone who hadn't heard of James Bond before to show off what Bond is, what film would that be?
Well, I've got a couple because I couldn't get it down to just one. Mm-hmm. Because I thought I'd obviously want to go with Goldfinger. That is, like we said, like you said earlier, that it's a perfect, not only Bond film, but a perfect film. So to go with that would make sense. However, it will depend, because if they've never heard of Bond, the pacing would maybe be a problem. And, you know, who is the character? Like, they've not watched the previous two, have they? They've just been thrown straight in.
Yeah.
Could prove quite difficult. So I went for GoldenEye.
Stop giving us explanations for these things that you clearly were never going to go for in the first place. Well, God, I have to say something that's not Brosnan to trick him.
Because it's well-paced, it's relatively modern. I know it's 25, 26 years old, but it's got a likeable Bond who is very good. Like we said in the Brosnan's episode, no one doesn't like Pierce Brosnan. Mm. It's got a good twist. The script is strong. It's got some nice gadgets. It's not too much on the gadgets. And it's got an Aston Martin thrown in. So you're getting all the flavours of Bond.
Yeah.
So that's why I went for GoldenEye. So I can justify it. Is that okay?
No, that's... I was expecting you to say GoldenEye and that's it. No explanation.
GoldenEye, next question.
I think his next answer is GoldenEye as well. I agree. I think that's a good choice. It's... It sits in a sweet spot, doesn't it, between the older world of Bond and the newer world. What about you, Buller?
Well, I think you're overthinking the question here, because for me, I think that, you know, the Bond franchise is absolutely ludicrous.
Oh, no.
And so I think if you're going to show a 007 film to someone, and the idea is that you're trying to convince them to, you know, get on board...
Yeah,
you've got to love him at his worst, right? So I thought, the obvious thought was, you know, GoldenEye from Russia with Love, Casino Royale, all good answers.
Yeah,
but then I wrote Die Another Day.
What are you trying to do? Who's this person that you're showing it to?
Listen, if you show them Die Another Day, and they at the end of it go, that was all right. You've got them.
Yeah.
You have
I know that I've been to your house and I know what you're like when you want people to leave. It sounds like this person that's coming over to watch Bond with you, you want to have an early night.
Listen, if you can love him at his worst, then you've got them hooked for life, I think. The flip side to that was, it's not a bad film, but it is a ludicrous film, and that's The Spy Who Loved Me. Because The Spy Who Loved Me is Bond to its most excessive... but most brilliant as well. It really toes that line between being ridiculous and brilliant. And I think that's the one, that would be my real answer. Like, Die Another Day tries, but it's just bonkers. But like, The Spy Who Loved Me, just from the opening scene all the way through, just has it all. It is, it's a stupid, stupid movie, but it's brilliant. And that's Bond for me. That you need that. You need that. You need to evidence that up front. Bond is stupid. It's ridiculous, but we love it.
Right, I'm taking that as a quote. Well, I went a little bit of a different angle with this because I was thinking I actually want these people to get into Bond. I don't want to show it to 100 people and two go, well, that's quite good. So, but what I thought was that I don't think there's one film that you can show to everyone, because I think someone who's 18 years old, 20 years old, and you go, oh, got this character, you're really going to like Bond, and you show them Goldfinger, they ain't going to have a clue what's going on. Yeah. They're not going to know. They've never heard of Bond before. This is just an old film, a slow old film about some spy trying to get this fat bloke. But if I was talking to somebody who was not a Bond fan, they didn't know what Bond was, but they're open to old films, they'll sit and watch something that necessarily isn't popular culture, I'd go for Goldfinger. Because I think if you sat someone down who likes old films and is interested in that sort of world, they're going to love Goldfinger. They'll just go, this is perfect. I get it straight away. I get the scenery. I get how it's all done. For people who aren't like that, I'd go Skyfall. People who don't know what Bond is, people who don't really necessarily want to watch a film like Bond or don't know they do, I think Skyfall's got it all. I think it's got a good enough story for people who want a story. It's got quite good action in it. It's quite enjoyable from that angle. There's just a lot in it. But also, I'd be happy making them watch that at the end. And if they said I liked it, I'd go, you like a Bond film. Whereas if I made them watch Spectre or maybe, I think another one, maybe Tomorrow Never Dies or something. If they watch those two films and at the end they said, oh, I like that, I'd go, well, okay, but you might not like the other ones because they're nothing like the other ones. But I think Skyfall just ticks the boxes for everyone. I think even in 10 years' time, you could show Skyfall to someone and they'd go, cool, like that and enjoy that. What can I watch next? Then I'd struggle to find out what to watch next.
You got to start low. That's my point. You got to start low.
Yeah. I don't know how many people you're expecting to carry on this. Do you not want anyone to watch Bond?
He wants to keep it all to himself.
Yeah. First you're going to watch Die Another Day, then Never Say Never Again.
Then A View to a Kill.
Yeah.
And that's it. They only made three. Yeah, just those three.
Don't you be can daft. Delete my number out your phone.
So, next one. Which Bond villain strikes the most fear for you? Which one terrifies you? Which one has you having sleepless nights? Butler.
Good question. I've got two answers for this. I'm going to go for my second one because I think it's less obvious. But Baron Samedi,
he's a good one. I thought about that.
That is a spooky, weird film. And he is a spooky, weird villain. Like, the weirdest, most out there, almost, of the Bond villains. He's supernatural. Like, I think he's supernatural. I mean, you never really get a sense of whether it's real or not.
Well, he dies, doesn't he?
But comes back to life.
Yeah.
Twice, I think, doesn't he? He dies.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to be in a room with him, would you, at night? Just you and him.
No. For me, he is the creepiest of all the Bond villains because he's got that hint of being slightly funny. He's got a sort of a clown-like element to it. The painted face helps as well, but that whole idea of voodoo is just, it's great. It's a weird James Bond film, and he's a great, great villain for me. So, yeah, Baron Samedi.
Good choice. Did you say another one as well?
Well, I was going to say Red Grant, but I don't know. Again, it just feels like I'm picking the obvious ones there. Red Grant is great. I mean, specifically Robert Shaw's portrayal of him. He's just so slimy, and he just looks like an absolute unit, doesn't he?
Yeah. Well, I think that, and Red Grant's a good example of this because it being which one's the scariest is a bit of a tricky scenario because it all depends on why they're coming to get you. I mean, if I had Dr. No coming after me to kill me, I'd probably be quite scared of him because, you know, he's got metal hands. Killing people. Yeah. But if I actually saw him in a room, I don't think I'd be that scared of him. the ones that I think if I, in real life, if I actually came face to face with them, I think what an interesting one I found is Dario from License to Kill. He's the henchman, Sanchez's henchman. He's good because he's just mad. He's just dangerous. He just wants to kill people. He just wants to hurt people. And you can kind of see that every time he's in a scene. He's not... You look at all these villains and they're not mad, most of them. They are, like, they're sociopaths and stuff, but they don't just want to kill people. They'll kill people because they don't care about killing people, but they don't want to. He just wants to knife people and shoot people, which I think is quite... As a character, there's not many other characters. I don't think there is another character like that, actually, in the Bond series that is just a psycho for no reason. Like, he's not actually got any reason behind it. But also, he's mad, but he doesn't actually look that scary. So I think for me, I'm going Silver, just because he's quite scary, but he's really weird as well. And if he ever wanted to do something to you, he wouldn't just kill you. He'd have you in a cell for months doing stuff to you and...
That's Skyfall, right?
Yeah.
Yes. I also went for Silver as well for that exact reason.
He's just a weirdo, isn't he?
He's unhinged. I don't trust him. Yeah, he just makes me itch inside. I don't like it.
Yeah. That's what you want. That's quite good. And I think that's probably that character. I'm not a massive fan of Silver as a baddie in his story arc, but as his character's good. He does it well.
Yeah. Very, very well. But especially, we have to reference when he takes his faceplate out as well. I mean, that just tops it off. There's the icing on the cake, isn't it?
Chilling, yeah.
They pull it off well. I don't particularly like it when he starts running around in a police outfit. I don't think he just loses his... That's the other point about these as well. I think a lot of Bond villains are scary to a point. So, like, you look at Blofeld in From Russia with Love, very scary because you can't see him. Yeah. As soon as you see him, he's not scary at all. If I saw Blofeld if I saw Donald Pleasance walking around dressed as Blofeld in Tesco's, I'd follow him around. I'd want to know what he was up to. But yeah, I don't think. But maybe even in No Time to Die, the Blofeld in that is scary, kind of initially when you don't see him, but they mess that up quite quickly, and he loses any kind of scariness, I think, when you actually start. He starts talking and you see him.
So was Silver your answer as well, Brendan?
It was, yeah. Yeah, with an honourable mention for Red Grant, but I thought it was a bit obvious because that whole train scene is just fantastic.
His story... You'd be scared if he was after you, wouldn't you, Red Grant?
Yeah. His story in the book is brilliant as well. He's like a serial killer who defects to the Russians. His story in the book is so much more detailed than you see in the film, and I think that adds to it, I think. Next question then. Oh, this is a good one. This is a very good one. And again, I think there's lots of different ways of interpreting it, but what's the least James Bond scene in the whole series? So, Wheatley, you wrote this question. Do you mean like the scene that's where James Bond is least like himself, or just the moment that's just like completely out of character?
I think it could be either, really. They're kind of two of the same if you're looking at certain scenes, but... Yeah, I think it's the most jarring scene for you. You're watching it and you're going, this isn't right. This doesn't feel right. I don't like this. And for me, I think for most people, they're probably going to... If say you picked a top 20, 80% of those are going to be Roger. Because there's some really weird scenes that are in Roger films that just don't... They're just so odd. I won't go into any other ones in case you mention them, but the one I picked was the Tarzan scene where he's getting chased in a view... which one is it? Octopussy. He's getting chased. Octopussy's got a few scenes that are odd. But he's getting chased and he ends up disappearing into the jungle. And then he comes back out swinging on a vine. And it's the actual... I think it's the actual Tarzan sound as Tarzan swings through the trees. And he's like swinging across and then it just stops. It's like a carry-on film. If you walked into the cinema, if you had a ticket to the cinema and you were late... And you open the cinema door and walked in and saw that, you'd close it straight away and go, no, that's not that one. Where's the Bond film?
That's a good way of putting it. You know, if you were to walk into the cinema late on that scene, would you think it was a Bond?
Is that Sid James? Who's that?
John Glenn has some weird moments, man. He puts some weird stuff in his films.
It just gets increasingly odd, the the stuff that they do. And I don't know why. I don't know if it's just like there's, it's the like the team have gone, just keep push up in the ante, just do anything that you can that keeps bums on seats. So some people probably would see that scene and go, this looks great. That looks brilliant. Tarzan, excellent. But yeah, not well, for me. I don't think it works.
Speaking of up in the ante, you know, really, really getting those the fans excited. I went for Roger as well, so I do feel bad that we're kind of picking on him. But that, it's an incredibly exciting scene where he takes a quiche out of the oven in A View to a Kill. That's it. That's the scene.
Yeah.
He makes a quiche. Bond makes a quiche.
Yeah. Well, that's a reference to a book out at the time, isn't it?
Yes. But I don't care. It shouldn't be in a Bond film.
Well, I whenever anyone ever mentions quiche to me, I always mention that it's Roger Moore's favourite food. And nobody's surprised. Oh, yeah. Yes, I can see that.
Yeah, I just think it's so out of character.
It's an unnecessary scene, isn't it? Why would you put that in?
Famously, the book Real Men Don't Eat Quiche, written by Bruce Feirstein, who wrote Goldeneye. So,
oh, yeah.
Fun fact, tying it all back for you.
Doesn't mean they should put it in, though.
No, absolutely not. Get it out.
I can't believe neither of you have addressed the elephant in the room when it comes to Bond, which is the rampant misogyny that runs throughout Bond that... You know, you can't talk about the least or the worst moments and not address any of it. You know, just to list a few, Bond smacking Tatiana in From Russia With Love when Karim Bey dies, threatening to break the arm of Maud Adams in Man With a Golden Gun. When he uses, I can't remember her name, but the lady in Thunderball as a human shield, then puts her down.
Yes, yeah.
When he blackmails a woman into sex in Thunderball. When he chokes a woman with a bikini in Diamonds Are Forever. I mean, I can go on if you want me to.
Well, I would say that those scenes, I would in no way condone those scenes, but there's a time and a place for them, and there's never a time and a place for a Tarzan scene where James Bond is swinging through trees.
Listen... I just wanted to address the elephant in the room because I just want to say, you know, I'm not down with it. The scene that I chose, it's from The World Is Not Enough, where we're having the boat chase down the Thames, and they turn a corner and they splash some traffic wardens because the traffic warden they splashed was from a reality TV show about traffic wardens that had been on that year, and they gave him a cameo in The World Is Not Enough.
Did he win a competition?
I don't know. That, to me, takes you out of the...
Yeah, that's...
I remember it happened at the time. And you don't... Bond. You don't
adjust... Don't put reality TV stars for no reason in a Bond film. Imagine that in a Sean Connery film.
Yeah. It's not on. Yeah. It is not on. So for me, that's the worst bit. That's the least Bondy moment for me. And that's
I didn't even know that one.
That's even considering the Die Another Day parachuting and the invisible car. That's worse than that for me.
That just seemed too... I think if the readers were listening to that and we said that, they'd be like, we know. Don't stop bringing it up. I had to go for a little bit more, something a little bit more in depth. But yeah, honourable mention to Die Another Day for most of it. just put Die Another Day in there.
Hey, listen, we're reevaluating Die Another Day. I think it's going to come back round.
Well, you two have.
Yeah.
It's going to be in my top five by the time we finish this A to Z.
Yeah.
So, should we wrap things up with a fun game of What If?
Is it a game? It's more like quite a stressful...
This is arduous,
script-writing project.
All right. So, the question is, you're in charge of the next James Bond film. This is after No Time to Die, obviously. Who do you get to play James Bond? Who plays the villain? Who are the female leads and what are the gadgets in the cars and what's it called? Who wants to go first? I'll go first. I'll go first.
<Go on. laughs>
My James Bond, I can't believe I never thought of it before, but Matthew Rhys from the Americans, do you know who I mean?
I've got no idea. I'm going to have to look him up now. Right. No, this is part of my problem doing this question because I don't know any new actors.
Matthew Rhys.
Because you only watch the same 24 films, don't you?
He's Welsh, but he's big in America. He might be a bit too old for it now, but he's Welsh. He's big in America. He's got a lot of TV history behind him. He looks the part. He's a great actor. Anyway.
Oh, yeah.
He's my James Bond. My villain is Ben Mendelsohn, because he's played a villain in everything. He's done Star Wars, he's done Marvel, so why can't he do James Bond?
Yeah.
And it takes Bond to Australia at last. Never filmed in Australia. Now is the chance. Bond girls. This is hard. It's hard to think of who would be suitable. I did toy with the idea of Vanessa Kirby. I thought she'd be quite good. But she's done Mission Impossible, so I don't know if you can cross the streams like that. But it's going to be someone like the girl from Bridgerton, isn't it? She's going to be someone like that, Phoebe Dynevor, whose mum is Sally Webster in Coronation Street, fun fact.
Yep. Everybody I speak to watches Bridgerton tells me that fact, like they're the only person in the world that knows it. I've just been told it about 15 people now, and I've not cared once.
Someone else who I think would be a good female lead in a Bond film, Alison Brie. I think she'd be quite good fun. And yeah, what's the gadgets? The gadgets I've come up with are sophisticated cookies.
Because this sounds a bit like going down the quiche route. What's going on there?
I mean, like, you know, cookies on a website.
Right, okay.
Because GDPR, it's very hot. It's very of the moment.
Right,
you've lost me now. I'm out. I'm not watching this.
But the car is the Lotus Esprit from The Spy Who Loved Me. They bring that back, finally. Right, and the name?
Good shout. Yeah.
I couldn't think of anything good. I've gone for a gambling term, Double or Quits.
Oh,
and I thought as an alternative, Double or Death, but I don't know if that even makes sense.
You could have Double O Quits.
Double O Quits. It's like an Irish gangster. Double or Quits.
The titles of Bond films aren't like puns. I don't think they'd work as well.
Anyway, that's my Bond film. Are you investing?
No, I'm not investing in anything at all.
You lost me at cookies.
Yeah, I've still lost at cookies.
Yeah, I would have preferred Bond baking cookies.
Yeah, because food programs are big. People like food.
Yeah,
using some cookies for... What was it? Explosives? I can't remember what you said.
No, they just...
He literally zoned out.
They're just sophisticated cookies. People go on websites, they get given these cookies by websites, and then they... I don't know, it's some mass hacking scam.
Track your viewing habits.
Yeah.
So my question to you is this. Why are they doing it in Australia?
Yeah. Better cookies.
Can't they just do this at MI6?
Is it because they've got an Australian actor? You put in the whole film in Australia?
Yeah.
He doesn't fly.
Yeah. I see. Yeah, don't... Let's not... Let's have a chat before we pitch this to the Broccolis.
Maybe it needs a more Australian title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's not a Walter PPK? Is that? No, that's not good. That's terrible.
No, I don't. Keep working on that Mission Impossible script.
Live and let didgeridoo.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, that's very good. Yeah.
Right, go on. Who's next? Who can do better than that?
Well, I can't do better than that because I... struggling. My major problem I have at the moment is I don't know any young actors. My knowledge of film and TV generally it finishes around 1999, but I think I was looking through the list of people that could play Bond, that have been suggested as playing Bond, and some of them I don't have a problem with. I think they're okay. Like Richard Madden, he's probably a little bit too famous. I think he'd be fine. I don't think it's a problem. Jamie Bell, I think he'll be all right, but I think it's to do with the context of the film itself. So what I'm a massive fan of going back to the 50s, 60s to do an early Bond, because I think the technology we have now makes Bond quite a lot more boring, and it overcomplicates it. I want a simple Bond. I want it to be about the character. I want it to be about the all the other people that are within it, and I want it to be low on gadgets, no technology. I want it to go back to basics. I want attaché cases. I want knives and shoes, all that kind of stuff. Nothing impressive. Thinking From Russia with Love. I basically want a From Russia with Love film.
Why don't you just watch that?
Well, that wasn't the question, was it? I can't answer it with, I'm just going to watch From Russia with Love. Thank you. So what I'm saying is, and also the other thing I want to do is go back to the old simple world of Mano el Mano. I want to have a Bond villain like Goldfinger, where it's him up against another guy. There's no conflicting governments and all this kind of stuff. It's just him getting another guy. Simple, sorted. I don't have a name for him. I gave up on a name for a villain and who would play him because I've got no idea which actors could play him. My title is A Stranger to Kill because I think in this next Bond series, starts off in like the 1950s, it's a story arc like we talked about where what they should have done with the Daniel Craig arc where Spectre was at the end. The whole thing was fitting all the pieces together until the end. So you've got to start it really simple. He's just going up against one guy, a stranger to kill. He's got to find this guy, gets him. But it opens up all this new world of this whole new story arc where eventually there's another villainous group. It's not Spectre. I don't want to use any villains that have already been in it. I don't want like Dr. No to come in or anything like that. All new, all fresh, all set in the 1950s. Rewrite it. Rewrite the storyline.
So who's your Bond? Who's your Bond?
Well, to be honest, I'll probably go out of the ones I've seen, James Norton or Jamie Bell, really. Just because they're at that kind of level. James Norton's probably not quite at the level that Jamie Bell is. I'd probably say Jamie Bell would be a good one because just mix it up a bit, change it. I don't want to see another carbon copy of any of the ones that have came in the past.
Is this how you're going to deliver the news when they get the role? Is that enthusiastic, is it?
I'll be bored of it by then. Yeah. So yeah, that's Stranger to Kill. That's my Bond film.
Good.
Okay.
Brendan.
So.
Dazzlers.
Well, I'm worried now.
Has it got Brosnan in it?
Now, hear me out.
It has.
We spoke in the Brosnan episode about doing about if we could have a fantasy one-off Logan style Bond. Mm-hmm. So do you know what? That's what I've gone for. If this was I'm in charge, this is what I'm doing.
Yeah,
I'm calling it Pierce Brosnan, and he's playing Bond.
You're calling it Pierce Brosnan, the film?
No, I'm calling.
That's confusing, isn't it?
So I'm calling Pierce Brosnan and giving him the role back and saying, look, unfinished business. That's not what it's called either. He can finish that off. One last hurrah.
And is that it?
Is that what it's called? Pierce Brosnan in Pierce Brosnan, unfinished business, one last hurrah, colon.
Yeah, to be honest, it's better than yours.
Double or didgeridoo, what are you on about?
So, I'm casting... You didn't ask me to cast M, but I'm doing it anyway.
Yeah,
Emma Thompson is going to be M in this. Right. I think she'd be fantastic.
Yep.
For the female leads, now, obviously, Brosnan is, what, 67, 68? So you need slightly older female leads. So I've gone for Salma Hayek.
Yep.
And Gillian Anderson.
Ooh, that's good. Yeah, yeah, I like that.
Now, I don't know if the story is that he's married when we go to this, you know, when we join Bond.
There's two other men and they don't know who the child is.
It's set on a Greek island.
Yeah, I knew this was going to happen.
In terms of cars and gadgets, car, I had him as still having the Vanquish. You know, this is the same Bond that we left in 2002. So it's a continuity of that. You know, he eventually retired and he's living his life out. He does get to drive the DB5 at some point. You've got to have that nod. I did want to have him driving away into the sunset in the DB5, but Skyfall ruined that, didn't it? So can't have that. Or Spectre, whatever. Whichever
one. Whatever
you
want, mate. Yeah. You've got Pierce Brosnan playing Pierce Brosnan in...
For the villain, and this is obviously inspired by, I'm watching WandaVision at the moment, as we all are.
Okay. Probably not the best inspiration for Bond.
No, not having Wanda and Vision.
Right. No, I think that works. That's good.
Paul Bettany. Paul Bettany is going to play a villain.
Nice.
But like you, I want a new villain. I don't want any mention of any previous villains, especially from the Brosnan era. You know, this. You wouldn't want to bring back
Victor Zukovsky's son. There you go. Locked done.
Oh, yeah. Spooning caviar into his gob.
Mr. Stamper. That would be quite good, actually. He's actually older now and he's become the proper villain. And he hates all the stupid stuff Eric Carver made him do.
Well, the story I've gone for is that MI6 has been absolutely destroyed. And that's where I've borrowed the title of William Boyd's book, Solo.
Right.
So basically, the reason he's called out retirement, because he's the only one left.
Right. What, is the only one from whole of MO6 left?
Yes.
So what is he... So is he, he's not employed doing this, he's just doing
it
himself.
No, obviously, you got the big hitters are still hanging around.
Is everything else destroyed, or is it just MI6 destroyed?
MI6 and all the 00 agents, so he's the only... Stop picking... Look.
I'm involved in this. I want to invest.
Right, he doesn't make a quiche. The other thing, the other title I went for was just Bond. But I thought,
A lot of people... I did a bit of research into new Bond film names, and one of them was 007, because it's like Logan.
Right, okay. Well, so I'll stick with Solo then, because I like that. It's a good...
Han Solo. One word. Lovely, yeah.
No. No.
Is it Solo? Solo, a James Bond story.
Going Solo, the Roald Dahl book.
I like it. All right. Can I suggest one change?
Yes.
Samantha Just Bond. One? Samantha Bond as M.
Ooh,
that would be good symmetry, I think.
I'm not saying I like it, but I will watch it. I think it's watchable. I'm in. I'm in. I'm putting the money in. Does he sing in it?
He does the theme song.
Yeah,
he sings it every time. All right, I'm in. Yep.
Well, I really hope someone makes posters for these films.
Nudge.
What was yours called, Wheatley?
A Stranger to Kill.
A Stranger to Kill with Ben, what was it? Jamie Bell.
Coming up with new people for it. Jamie Bell, A Stranger to Kill.
Very good, very good. Well, I like all three of those ideas.
Yeah. I mean, I'd watch them if any of them were made.
I mean, we've set the bar low. If any listeners want to come up with a far better idea, and preferably don't use the Brosnan angle again, because...
What?
We talk about Brosnan a bit too much in this podcast, Brendan.
Hey, laser...
You could have done that. You could have done it with Dalton. That would have been a good alternative, wouldn't it?
Yeah, Dalton is M.
He's not interested. He's not interested in the role. He quit the role.
Laser.
The difference is, Brosnan... No, it's Brosnan. Stop recasting.
Yeah, you can't call it Piers Brosnan without Piers Brosnan being in it.
Well, the concept isn't that coherent anyway. I don't think people are going to be any less confused.
Well, listen, let's wrap it up there, I think. If you think we should make this film... No, sorry. If you like this episode and you want us to do more like this, then please send your questions that we can chew over to... What's the email address, Wheatley?
podcast@jamesbondatoz.co.uk.
And on social media, Brendan?
@jamesbondatoz. Went American. @jamesbondatoz. And that's on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
That's it. Yeah, so James Bond will return with a normal episode next time. And yes, we will see you then. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.
Ciao.
James Bond A to Z podcast features Tom Butler, Brendan Duffy, and Tom Wheatley. The podcast was produced by Tom Wheatley, with music by Tom Ingemels, and artwork supplied by Helen Dolly.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.